Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast, the best independent sports podcast on the planet, is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Ponko Chicken. Ponko Chicken is the home of the best Japanese American chicken tender, and it continues to rack up the awards in Atlanta, winning the 2019 Super Bowl Live Top Selling Vendor Award, multiple best-selling tastes at the Taste of Atlanta Awards in 2017 and 2018, and even the Best Fried Chicken Award at the 2018 ATL Cluckfest. Ponko is all about connecting cultures, cultivating happiness, one chicken tender at a time. I love Ponko, their family, and I can't thank them enough for their support of this podcast. It means a lot. And so go to their Midtown location, their Tucker location, and all their future locations as they take over Atlanta, because they're family and I love them. And I couldn't be more excited to see more and more locations pop up and all of that that goes with it. So go to Ponko, get some chicken, get some rice, get some beer. There's all kinds of great stuff. Whatever you want, Ponko Chicken has it. So go do that. Also, go to ChaseThomasPodcast.com. I'm writing my ass off there these days. So go do that. Read my stuff. You can get access to all of my previous episodes. You can buy my merch. You can learn more about just why I do what I do and why I believe I'm going to get where I want to go. This is my dream, this sports media thing. And you are going to see me on ESPN one day, or Sports Illustrated, or Fox Sports, or DAZN, or whoever. Because I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep fighting. I'm going to keep grinding. I'm going to keep punching out episodes, writing articles, and just outworking everyone. Because I just want this more. And I believe in my product, and I believe in where I'm going. Wherever 300 episodes strong, and this is what I want. There will be no slowing down. Took a break, but this is my jam, and this is what I want. This is my passion, and so leave a rating, leave a review on iTunes. It means a lot. Share my articles on Twitter, Facebook, wherever, and join me as I keep climbing the ladder and all of that because I just, I need your support. So if you like the podcast, keep listening, keep subscribing, tell your friends, keep sharing it out, keep reading my work. And yeah, so, okay. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, welcome back to a Thursday night edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I am now joined by an old friend who I have not talked to in a while, but he still is. He is in the NBA Twitter sphere. He is a father now. Lots changed because everybody in NBA Twitter just, we get old and keep progressing, and it gets weird because you have to think about how long you've known these people on NBA Twitter, and you're like, oh my god, I'm almost 30. I've known this person and followed them and read their work since like 2007. This is ridiculous. But anyway, that person laughing in the background, David Zavok. Do I remember how to pronounce your last name? I don't even remember. Zavok.
I never actually correct people, but so I might not have even told you right before, but actually Zavok.
Yeah, see, there's, I even threw out two different options and I was still wrong. So we're off to a great start. But David, I appreciate you making the time tonight. There is a multitude of reasons. I'm sure you're like, oh, why is Chase reaching out to me in late August to talk about the Cavs? Well, David, I can answer that for you. I don't really understand this team. I'm intrigued by what they're doing. I think people should be talking about this team a little bit more, and not just because they're bringing back the old Mark Price uniforms, the Ricky Davis uniforms for a little bit this year, but it's more of like, I think they're just in this weird situation that I'm curious how Cavs fans and how people who follow this team look at the state of their post LeBron rebuild. So what is Cleveland doing with Colin Sexton and Darius Garland?
Yeah, so I think there's a few things that are going on with the Cavs. One, I'm sort of famously negative, but I think that they're actually...
About Kyrie.
Yeah, Kyrie. But even that, like, that was... Like, it's weird because Cavs fans, like, Kyrie was, like, the only thing they were ever really negative about. And then... They were very, very wrong when he made the shot, and then ended up being right. So Kyrie is a weird case.
You feel good about that.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's a whole podcast. Maybe we'll do that sometime. Because I have recently written about the Nets, and I think they're interesting. But, no, I mean, the Cavs are probably the worst team in the NBA.
I don't think so. Really?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think all of the statistical models that are sort of coming out sort of point to that. Here's what I'll say. If Kevin Love is healthy for 65 games, you know, then maybe there are four or five teams that are worse. But if you get what they've gotten recently from him, which is not that, then I think, you know, they're going to give a lot of minutes to young players, and teams that give a lot of minutes to young players just don't win. So I think they're trying to rebuild the right way. I think that the Colin Sexton pick, they just were really, really high on him, and I don't totally understand it. He started to live up to it in the last 2 months of last season. But I think if they made the Garland pick and then the Sexton pick, it would maybe be a little bit more easy to understand, or at least they would have made the Garland pick and maybe that would have kept them from taking Sexton. But I think Garland is a very
easy... Why do you say that?
I think Garland's like a very easy pick to defend. Like, I think his shooting ability, I think he was the high upside pick. I don't really have any issues with the Garland pick. I still have questions about the Sexton pick. I think it was to the point where they know that Sexton's not really a point guard. Maybe he's just going to be a guy off the bench long term. Garland is
but you don't draft that in the lottery.
Yeah, no, I know. I think their plan is to be in the lottery again next year, but they're certainly not trying.
Even if it's not their plan, I think that's going to be in the cards for this.
Yeah,
cast
no,
team.
And they their pick, if it's not in the top 10, it would go to Atlanta. So they have every incentive to be bad.
Is that true? I didn't even realize. Yeah, I forgot about this. What deal was this?
From the Kyle Korver trade. So when they traded for Kyle Korver.
That's right.
So, but here's the thing. If it doesn't go to Atlanta this year, it basically is just done. So if the Cavs have a top 10 pick this year, they basically don't owe Atlanta anything. So they have every incentive to you know, give it another shot in the lottery, be bad, let Garland and Sexton play together. Maybe they're terrible, but you know what? That serves a purpose too. So they'll
That's why they're gonna be playing Dellavedova, Jordan Clarkson still on this team.
Well, and that's where I think, you know, if you really are gonna be, you know, who knows what'll happen with Sexton and Garland? It probably won't work, but who cares to try it out? But then, you know, why is Jordan Clarkson there? I don't have an answer to that. Deli, you know, who cares? Because, you know, he at least isn't going to fire up a ton of shots.
Up that espresso machine though.
Yeah. And until he goes to the hospital. So, I mean, it's a very weird roster. It's expensive. I mean, they are brushing right up against the luxury tax.
Are they really? Who are they paying? You have Larry Nance, who got a pretty affordable deal. I mean, is Brandon Knight still in the books?
Yeah.
How are they brushing him against the... Okay, so it's Brandon Knight.
Paying Brandon Knight $15 million. They're paying Tristan Thompson $18 million. They have... Deli is, I think, making like 11 or something like that, maybe 10.
Oh, God.
It's almost impressive, Chase. They have like six. they have like six guys on expiring contracts. Jordan Clarkson's one of them. That like total up to like $80 million. Like six players, $80 million, and like Matt Moore and some other people have done like top 30 free agents of next year, and none of them are top 30. So $80 million worth of guys who like are not like really enticing. So on one hand, they have these expiring contracts that they can be flexible with. It's unclear how much, you know, teams would want them. You know, maybe Tristan Thompson plays well and a team, you know, talks themselves into trading for him. You know, that's possible. You know, he could be a fit, you know, maybe in Brooklyn. I don't know how they'd make it work in LA, but I'm sure LeBron would like him.
I think he belongs in Houston, honestly.
Maybe, yeah. I mean,
Tyson Chandler is the backup right now in Houston. I think Capella, you can't be counted on play 82 games, and I think he'd actually be a really perfect fit in Houston. I don't know what they could offer because they really have nobody else outside of like six guys, and they have to keep all of them. So I don't really know what they can bring to the table other than like, because they don't really have the kind of contracts to make it work. So
I don't know. So it's a weird roster because they finally have some young dudes that they can at least try and figure out, you know, if they have anything. They still have Chetty Osman.
We have to talk about my guy Chetty Osman. What do you think about Chetty Osman these days?
You know, we had like the big hype machine for him last summer, and then
yes, you did.
The Cavs are so one thing that like, you know, the people who don't follow the Cavs every day, and why would you, quite frankly? But
I'm a psycho, and I keep up with all these teams every day. Fair enough.
They like didn't have healthy power forwards for most of the year. So, like they kept putting like David Nwaba or Chetty Osman at power forward, and then they would like get hurt immediately because they just can't like physically do that. And so like Chetty, it would seem like, you know, when they played him, you know, on the wing, you know, he'd be okay. He wasn't having like a breakout year, but then he was banged up for most of the year because they'd push him into things that were just not really what his body could handle. And, you know, so I don't know. I said at one point, it wouldn't surprise me if they gave him an extension. And I said like 4 years, $22 million. And I had, you know, half of Twitter tell me, no way, that's not nearly enough. He would never do that. And then the other half of Twitter saying, why on earth would you give him that much money? He was garbage last year. And I sort of understand both perspectives because, you know, I do think he still could be, you know, a really nice bench piece, decent wing defender who can handle the ball a little bit, but he certainly didn't prove it last year. So I don't know.
I want him to be the point forward that I've dreamed about. Like he needs to go ahead and he needs to take that Haydee Turkoglu mantle because it's time, Chetty.
It's
time to make it happen.
It's not like I don't think that's like a crazy. I mean, Haydee Turkoglu, he's not going to be that good. But like it's not like crazy to think he could do that off the bench and be like a helpful player. You know, and so I think what's nice about and I'll say this, Cavs fans have sort of talked themselves into this being a fun season. I don't know how you have fun when you win 22 games, it's usually not fun, but if there's a benefit to no expectations, it's, you know, if Chetty Osmond's great, that's gravy. If he's not, okay, well, you couldn't really expect a whole lot anyway. So,
I mean, the only way this team is fun this year, this is fun if you're a Cavs fan, is if the backcourt duo looks like a real thing. They can play together, that can just score a bunch, that can just be a pain in the ass, that just looks like a backcourt that you can actually build around. Like, if it shows any... obviously, you're not going to get, like, Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum type stuff, or Bradley Beal, John Wall, but, like, that's the thing, is if you see those two as, like, oh, they can play together, and you look at some splits, and you're like, oh... The on-off with these two on the floor is not god-awful, but like that's what makes this fun. But because I mean the Hawks had the same thing last year where they were just awful in the first part of the season, and then Trey started doing stuff later on, you're like, oh, this team still sucks, but they're exciting sucks. And that might be a possibility. It just depends on what Garland and Sexton look like together.
Yeah, and I think I don't even care about Sexton, quite frankly. Like, if Darius,
you were really out on Sexton.
Oh yeah, no, God. I mean I was and
not a fan,
and he played better, so you know, I'm not even really trying to be a jerk about it, but
I think you're just a big Penny Hardaway fan. Didn't like what Colin Sexton did to his kid a couple years ago back in the day AAU circuit.
There you go. Penny Hardaway was like my first ever favorite player. So there you go.
See, this is all coming together. That's why you don't like Colin Sexton, because he went at Penny Hardaway's son and just made his life a living hell in that memorable AAU clip from years ago. Mm-hmm.
But
it makes sense. You have a grudge.
But I just think if Garland is good enough, that's enough for me. Like, I'm not going to like put all these extra expectations. Like, he also has to. Because that is the problem with playing Sexton and Garland together is it's already like super difficult for young NBA players. And now you're adding to the degree of difficulty. Like, these guys are just trying to assert themselves as being able to score in the NBA. Now you want them to also like share the ball and, you know, run a modern NBA offense. Like, I think it's something that NBA Twitter doesn't like get. Like, just how hard it is for a 19-year-old to be good, you know, because like even like Trae Young, like how helpful was he to like winning basketball games last year?
I mean, he was helpful in the last couple months. The last 2 months, he was helpful for sure.
The way that Trae Young played last year, do you think that's conducive to like winning a playoff series?
No.
Because the
playoff series is just different because like I'm sure you're familiar with this, but I still think the Luka trade, worst in Atlanta history by far.
Well,
and it's still just god awful. And Trey is just going to be a turnstile in the playoffs. Like we know how the playoffs work, where teams are just going to be like, oh, Trey is this size, we're going to put him in a pick and roll over and over and over again. Trey just can't get bigger. He can't grow. He can't, like, his frame just doesn't. It's just not conducive to be a good player. Like, he had one of the worst defensive real plus minuses of all time last year. Like, he's going to be god awful.
But I would say you're kind of making my point where I think you're right. Like, on one hand, I think you're right because his body size is what it is and you can't change that. On the other hand, if you're expecting a 19-year-old to have like a good defensive anything, like when has that ever happened? right?
But you could see it with Sexton. You could see him being a really good defender. Like, the way he plays, I could see if, like, because a lot of defense is just motivation and just the way guys play. Like, I could see him being, with the right coach, just a pain in the ass. Like, I could see him being a good on-ball defender. Like, I could see a scenario. He also has the body type for it. I don't know. I think Sexton could. I'm not saying he will, but if I had to pick between him and Trae Young as who's going to be, who would I bet on to be a better defender 10 years from now, I would bet on Sexton, but I also would bet on Trae unanimously as a better offensive player. So I don't know. It's complicated.
No, and I think that that's fair. I think my point would be, you know, you're just looking for tools in the first couple of years, because if you're looking for a sort of complete player or a finished product, you're just obviously not going to get that. So I think that Trae Young in 3 or 4 years, when Atlanta is ready to win, at least mentally, he'll be able to understand, you know, what he's reading defensively. And I would hope that mentally he will sort of understand the importance of defending. And I would say, you know, Kyrie is an example of somebody who, you know, in his first 3 years, didn't really care very much about defending, but when he had to in the NBA finals, he sort of got to a level where it was acceptable enough. I think Trae can do that. But like, I just don't think expecting Colin and Darius to like know how to run a competent NBA offense together is good enough. But if I see Darius Garland make some off the dribble threes that make me think he can do that at this level, I'm going to be happy.
True or false, Thompson and Love are on this team in the summer of 2020?
Definitely not both of them. You know, I think there's a strong likelihood that Tristan Thompson gets traded. Could be soon,
before
could
Kevin
be later.
Love.
Yes, I would guess so. And part of it goes back to, like, you know, trying to help both Garland and Sexton's development. Like, I want them to have like a competent offensive player to work off of. It gets complicated when the team is 3-15 and Kevin Love wants to be traded, which could certainly happen. In fact, I would probably guess that it will happen.
That he'll ask for a trade.
Yeah. I think that all things equal, the Cavs would be much happier moving a Tristan Thompson than Kevin Love, even though obviously you could probably get a little bit more back for Love.
I don't know what the value is for Kevin Love these days. Like, I have no idea what his value would be. I don't know what a trade would look like for him. I don't know what kind of assets so many of these GMs would give up for a big like Kevin Love at this point in his career. Like, I have no idea. Like, Tristan Thompson, pretty easy. Like, rim runner, like, there's a bunch of guys like Tristan Thompson, like, a contender will want him, and that will be that. But, like, Kevin Love, I don't know what he would bring back. I don't know if he would even give you a first-round pick. I don't know. What would your expectations be for a Kevin Love trade? Like, what would you want in return at this point?
This is, like, the most, I would say, of all of the issues in Cavs Twitter, this is like the most divisive, because, you know, obviously every week somebody comes up with a Kevin Love trade and Cavs fans are offended by it because it's not valuing him at the level that, you know, they think that, you know, he should get. If there was a way to get some sort of like top 15 to 18 protected first round pick, you know, plus a, you know, and or a, you know, a nice young, you know, 20 or 21 year old player who's sort of shown a couple, you know, skills, basically like a Chetty Osman type player from another team that, you know, you could feel good about maybe trying to develop. You know, that's kind of what you're looking for. You might have to take, you know, because Kevin Love makes so much, you might have to take, you know, back a bad contract. But like I said, my inclination would be get him as many minutes with Darius Garland as possible, because, you know, if you're going to develop his passing, you're going to give him space to work. You know, Kevin Love is your best offensive player, and he helps more on the team right now you know, next summer, you know, maybe you change your mind. Or like I said, you know, if he wants out, then you kind of have to do that.
I would do the Atlanta trade. Remember how that was rumored a couple months ago? And I would welcome it. And Falcons fans, Hawks fans were a little bit concerned about, like, oh, we can't bring in a guy like that. It'll mess up our just trajectory. And also, like, Kevin Love's not moving the bottom line that much. Like, the Hawks are going to be right. A fringe playoff team with or without Kevin Love. I look at it as more of like, oh, they have a bunch of cap space next year. And guess what? Draymond Green, the only real target for them, because Travis Link drafted him and was the guy who really wanted him in Golden State, he's gone. Like, that the 2020 class is just garbage. So what are you spending that money on? Like, I would rather use some of their assets right now and just trade for a contract that's on the books for a couple of years that can help you win, because this is basically your core now. Like it or not, I think it's a bad core to develop around. I think it's a bad core to invest heavily in, because I don't think there's anyone in there that profiles a top 10 guy. But look, they're getting out. They're going to be good. They're going to be in the playoffs for like 10 plus years. Great. Are they ever going to contend with this core? Absolutely not. But if there is a way for me to just look at this team and be like, oh, this is a playoff team, it's like you bring in Kevin Love and you start him in Collins, and you look at just, okay, John Collins is a rebounding machine. Kevin Love is a rebounding machine. Like, if you want to, like, I love Dean Oliver's like four factors and everything else, where it's like, if you want to just build out from Collins and Love, and then having Trae Young with pick and pops with him, and just like that would just be a pain in the ass to defend with those guys and Kevin Herter on the perimeter with Hunter and everybody else, like Alan Crabb. Like, it's just, it would be very fun. It would make sense. And I think Kevin Love would be happy playing in that kind of scheme, and just, he would look really good in it. I don't know if he'd want to go to a team that's a fringe playoff team at this point, but I also just don't think contenders are going to be all that interested outside of like maybe Portland. Like, if they're like, oh, we're close, we'll just do it. I don't know, there's just not a lot of teams that just make a lot of sense to me. And if I'm a GM, like, I'm not giving up a bunch of assets for a big at this point in his career, and just really giving up a lot of assets for a big in general. So,
well, the reason why it makes sense for Atlanta is the same reason he makes sense for the Cavs, right? Like, He helps that young core move forward, and it's a guy that like Trae Young has to respect, and like, he's won an NBA title and he's friends with LeBron James.
Right. He's just not going to push a contender over the top. Like, that's the other thing. It's like, it's not going to bring in some colossal return, because nobody who trades for him, like the Bucks, if they traded for him, they're not going to be more likely to win the title with Kevin Love. It's just not how it works.
Yeah, the problem, though, then is the same reason why he wants to leave Cleveland is the same reason why he would not be enthused about going to Atlanta. So
right.
I just don't know.
There's not a great option. He might be in trouble.
Well, he's helped by the fact that the league is more wide open. You know, he's probably not like a star anymore, but if you are a team with two stars and you think, you know, you can add him, and he does move the dial just a little bit. You know, obviously Portland's the team that's always mentioned, but
Utah.
I don't know. Yeah, Utah is always mentioned. Does he put him over the top? I don't know. I can't say that, but I can see a team talking themselves into it more now than I could maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah. Last thing, and then we'll wrap up here. John Beilein, new coach. Wanted to get out of college. His I think his son coaches like an hour and a half away in Ohio somewhere. What are your expectations for John Beilein? Were you surprised when it happened? Do you think this is something that Dan Gilbert is going to give him a long leash, that he'll be here for the long haul? What do you make of the John Beilein era? And
hey, I cannot predict Dan Gilbert in any way, shape, or form. I think like, Dan Gilbert was always going to go for kind of a name outside the box choice. He's, you know, he always wants Izzo. David Blatt was an outside the box choice. He always keeps us on our toes. I think it's kind of the best possible outcome, like, of that, right? Like, I think Beilein, at least offensively, is open-minded. His teams at Michigan, you know, shot a lot of threes. They used, you know, off the bounce creation. What I worry about is, you know, at Michigan, he was the man, and he, you know, the players really had to toe the line for him, right? Versus in the NBA, the players have all of the powers. So I'm curious to see how he responds to that. But we'll see.
Well, he should be great for Colin Sexton then. Sounds like that's a match made in heaven, folks.
I mean, I think Colin Sexton's pretty coachable, so we'll see.
Okay. All right. I don't think my last prediction on the Cavs, I don't think they're the worst team in basketball this year. I think they're bottom five. I still think it's the Wizards, because every game that Bradley Beal does not play, they literally do not have a shot at winning that game. They do not, like, they can't win. Like, that roster is that bad around him. Like, you think the Cavs roster is bad? They don't even have the young guys to throw out there and steal a couple games. Like, Bradley Beal, he's like, I'm giving a DMP rest. Guess what? Go ahead and mark that down as a loss, because that game is over. I still think it's the Wizards, but I don't know. We'll have to see.
I'll take it.
I mean, no, you want it. You want the Cavs to be the worst team in basketball next year. A little bit, I guess. I don't know. David, thank you so much. Go check out fearthesword.com. Is there anything we need to check out from you this week?
No, I'm actually doing a little bit for Complex Magazine. We're ranking the best football movies of all time. So maybe look up.
Mm. What is the best football movie for you?
For me, there really aren't that many good ones, I don't think, but compared to baseball. But actually growing up, Rudy was my favorite movie. But I'm kind of a Notre Dame fan. Toledo is like super Catholic and kind of in the middle of Notre Dame, Michigan, and Ohio State. So, it's pretty crazy.
Can it be The Water Boy? I think The Water Boy might be.
So it's funny that you ask, because I have three movies in the rankings that I wrote about. Rudy is one, and Water Boy is another. So, Water Boy is pretty high up on the list. It's higher than Rudy, if that gives you an indication of complex.
Good, because I'm just like, not a lot of great football movies, and like, if I had to like pick one to just throw on in the background, it's like that or Longest Yard, or I don't know. I mean, Friday Night Lights, the movie, was good, but I'm a bigger fan of the show. Little Giants, can't rule
Little
that
Giants
one out.
Is on the list. I'm also writing about Friday Night Lights.
Okay, we're on the same page. All right, we'll go check that out from David. David, thank you for making the time, sir.
Hey, thanks, Chase. Talk to you soon.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas Podcast. I am now joined by old friend Nick Stellini. Nick, good evening. How are you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
I am good. New mic, new Nick.
No, same mic I've had for a while, but I just had to, you know, get it plugged in and stuff.
Okay. How's everything going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
A lot of change. A lot of change in my life.
Same.
The good kind of change, I would say. But just different.
Yeah, me too.
There's a lot of change going on in Kansas City right now, Nick. And I want to bounce around a couple just little things here tonight. Baseball, we're kind of like, we just know the Braves are going to win the NL East. Twins are looking good. The Yankees are looking good. The Astros might have the best team in baseball. Like, the Dodgers are fine. Like, it's pretty much set up for the most part. But the Glass family has thrown a wrench in Kansas City. What does the potential Royals sale mean for the Royals going forward?
So I'm not sure how much this really means, given the modern state of baseball. So the Royals are supposedly being market, like, there's this guy from the Indians, John Sherman, the vice chairman of the Indians, is supposedly vying to purchase the Royals from David Glass. I'm not sure how much would actually change. Like, anytime this sort of thing happens, you get this thought of, oh, new ownership means a new perspective and a new checkbook and everything like that. The thing about baseball in 2019, 2020 going forward is that nobody wants to spend money. And I don't know how much money John Sherman has. Obviously, a lot of he's buying a baseball team. You know, this is probably going to go down for like $1 billion. So he's got a good amount of money. But having that money and being willing to spend it is another thing entirely, especially when you're in a market like Kansas City, which is a small market, to be fair. But being in a small market also gives you the excuse of, oh, we're a small market team. That being said, the Royals farm system is ascendant once again. They have a lot of good talent. There's good things going on down there. It should start servicing at some point in the near future. So whether or not they build around that core is the question, because we've seen teams have really good farm systems and then bring those guys up and have nothing to show for it because they didn't put pieces around the young players. Ideally, the Sky would spend more than David Glass has on his team. But
if you know anything about the Indians structure and that front office, they're definitely going to go all in on spending.
That's where I was going. I mean, you've already had Paul Dolan come out and say, oh, enjoy Francisco Lindor while you can.
Still one of the most insane things that did not get enough publicity, I think.
No, like that happened in the press and like, it just was like, okay, no, that doesn't think it like, got.
And they talk shit about his leadership behind the scenes. Like the GM, I forgot, what is his name?
Chernoff.
Huh?
Chernoff.
Was it Chernoff? It was someone, I don't think it was Chernoff. It was like their VP. They have like all these different types. The Indians, it wasn't Chernoff, but it was the one right above him who has like the fake title. I forgot who it is off the top of my head.
Was
anyway,
Mark Shapiro before he left?
Yes.
Before he left to run Toronto?
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was.
Oh, okay.
And like you, like it was just throwing it out there of like, are we sure he's a leader? Like one of those things where they were talking about Lindor of like, we're not sure if we can pay somebody like Lindor if he's a real leader. He was really close with Brantley and they let Brantley go. And Brantley was like this subtle clubhouse guy. Just the way they phrased it was just like, they're already throwing this dude under the bus before he's even out the door. And just like it just ass backwards of how you'd want your pro sports team to operate, I think.
Just a little bit, yeah.
But yeah, it seems like this is like all but done, and I wonder how long this has been in the works, because he is 84, and it would seem very MLB-y to just do this months in advance of just like, hey, and if you look at the way he got into the Indians ownership group, you're like, oh, this dude's like a, I don't know, he's clearly, Sherman's been on the radar for a while, and he's clearly wanted his own team and all that kind of stuff. It kind of reminds me of what happened with the Panthers. With the minority owner from the Steelers, who was just waiting for his time and got it, but also he's a billionaire and he's also kind of a crazy person, it seems like. So I don't know, we'll have to see, but like it can't be any worse. Like the Royals, I don't think are going to spend less.
Famous last words.
Can they spend less? Could he be cheaper than David Glass? Are we sure?
You want to find out?
I guess. He purchased this team for $96 million in 2000, by the way.
And he's going to make so much money off of it.
He's going to make a billion.
But, you know, baseball's dying. We can't spend on players.
God, the money he is going to make off the Kansas City Royals is...
The Royals!
Wow. It should be interesting to see, though, if Dayton Moore survives this, because like that was the other interesting thing, is that like he stayed on because there was questions about whether or not he would go, because John Chernoholtz kind of may or may not have wanted him in Atlanta, and there was some mutual interest, it seemed like, there. But I mean, he has family in Kansas, all that kind of stuff. He's been there forever. He had a cushy gig, right? Like this team was supposed to be bad for a while. He has carte blanche to just do whatever for a couple years. Jorge Soler can have a great year. Fun. Great. Came out of nowhere. Fantastic. But they're not going to be good. And he knows that they're not going to be good. And the Glass family knew they were not going to be good for years. But they got their ring and he had just time. And now it's a new owner. And it's like, well, what if he's not about any of that? So I wonder if he's starting to second guess not just going to Atlanta and taking that gig versus hanging out in Kansas City and expecting things to just be the status quo for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, like, new ownership groups typically want to get their own guy in there.
Right.
That being said, Dayton Moore's got a track record here. He's got a World Series ring. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. Like you said, there is that Braves connection. If I had to guess, I would say he goes, not because he's necessarily done a bad job. I don't think he's done a terrible job there. I just think that, you know, it's time maybe for a fresh perspective, and the new ownership doesn't want their own person. They're probably going to hire some 35-year-old from Harvard, which is fine. That's how it goes these days. Dayton Moore is always going to have a place in baseball somewhere. That or he gets hired by some.
See, know, I think if he gets more, moved out gets hired of by some Kansas City, I think he's done. Group. I don't think we see him again.
So you think he's going to go to some anti-porn lobbying group in K Street?
I think he's just going to, I don't know, if you read about his story and his Kansas roots and everything, I don't know. I think I could see him just being like, no, I think I'm good. I mean, he'd be fine for the rest of his life. He doesn't actually have to do this anymore.
Right. I'm just saying, like, if somebody wants him, if he wants to stay in baseball, there will be a place for him. Somebody's going to hire
probably,
him.
Probably, yeah. Hmm. He's only 52, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I it should be interesting to see how that works. The Boston Red Sox, who I think we've all written off. I mean, I don't know what to think about this team right now. What do you make of them?
I make of them that it's funny. Mm-hmm. I just think it's funny. You know, they have two guys who are probably like the top six or seven that will be in the MVP voting this year, probably. In Devers and Bogarts. They also have some
which is
guys
insane because we thought it was going to be Betts and, I mean, maybe Sale.
Well, that's like you've also got Mookie Betts and JD Martinez on the team. We're not having bad years, by the way. You've got Andrew Benintendi on this team. Christian Vasquez figured out how to hit. And they're still not going to make the playoffs. Part of that is that Chris Sale's elbow didn't totally blow up, but it's bad now. He had an up-and-down year. David Price was actually pretty good before he got hurt. But the pitching is just eh. You know, Rick Porcello is having the bad Rick Porcello year. And then they let Craig Kimbrell and Joe Kelly go and didn't do anything to replace them. And the bullpen has been suspect. Shocker, I know. The depth is just not there because the system has been bad. They traded away a lot of their guys. Like, I'm shocked Dave Dombrowski didn't build a good bullpen. They traded for Andrew Kashner.
They didn't have to build anything. All he had to do was just re-sign Kelly and Kimbrell.
Or replace them.
Right. And, yeah, just replace them.
Which they just said, no, screw it, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
We're going to count on Ryan Brazier being good again, and shocker, he's not. That's not to say that it's been a total disaster. Matt Barnes or Brandon Workman's really broken out. Matt Barnes has been solid again. But again, they traded for Andrew Kashner as the answer, and that didn't work. Marcus Walden's been okay, to his credit. Not good.
It's I don't want them to make the playoffs just because I don't think they deserve it. The way they operated this offseason, I'm just like, no, you deserve this, Dave Dombrowski and this ownership group. This is ridiculous. Like, the arrogance of just thinking you could do this without investing in your bullpen and doing other stuff. Like, no, sorry, don't want you in it. Let's get Rays A's. Let's do that.
And that's no besmirchment on the players themselves.
Right.
They've clearly balled out this year, to their credit. But no, I mean, like, Dombrowski and John Henry, again, most of this is probably John Henry, to be fair. I don't think Dave Dombrowski said screw it.
Right,
I'm
he's
not
a very
try.
Win-now GM.
That's not his MO.
Yeah.
He's not screw it. We're not gonna do it. I mean, to be fair, they won a World Series last year.
They did.
So you can't like really bury them, but also like.
Well, it's just weird because like you know, like you've already depleted this farm system enough where it's like you just might as well just see this through. Like Dombrowski is not gonna be around this team 5 years from now, and everything else just like keep riding this wave until the end. Especially like the stuff coming up mid season of like they're not gonna pay Mookie Betts, like kind of like the Lindor stuff.
There's
like
talk of trading Mookie Betts,
which is just
insanity
dumb.
To me.
Right,
insanity. Like, if you don't want to pay him, that's fine. But, like,
no, you're the Red Sox. You're top three in payroll every year forever. No, you just pay one of the top 10 players in baseball. You pay him forever.
I mean, I agree. But also, like, if you're, like, for some reason committed to not paying him, just, like, write it out.
But also, like, why are you committed to not paying him? What are these teams doing?
But then you're willingly saying, no, I don't want Mookie Betts on my team for the next 2 years while I have my young core.
Yeah.
And I'm in win now. Like, that's insane.
You don't trade a top 10 player in win now mode. That's hustling backwards.
Yeah.
I don't understand any of that. I don't know. I just hope they don't make the playoffs. That's all I hope for, is the Red Sox to miss the playoffs and to address all of these weird, dumb decisions that they've made. And they can, but the thing is, like, and I talked to John Taylor of SI about this, in that I think it's not like this is like a tough fix. The Red Sox can easily address a lot of these problems this winter.
Very easy to fix.
Yes. They'll be fine next year. Like, they can easily address this, but this year
they can be fine next year. Let's put it that way.
Yes. They're not in dire straits. Let's put it that way. Baltimore, though, they've given up 1,000 home runs to the Yankees this year. Yes. But they also cleaned house. So I don't know how much you're keeping an eye on what's going on with the front office changes with
their playoffs or something.
Yes. And they haven't hired anyone to replace them. And there's been miscommunication as to, Elias has said that they're going to hire somebody else to fill these roles. But these are people with the team, like, across multiple general managers. Like, it goes back from Dan Duquette and guys before that. It's not just a simple changeover. Like, he is completely cleaning house. And I think that's interesting, because there's been a lot of questions over the last couple of years of, like, who's actually running the Orioles. Like, there's been all these different pieces in the Baltimore Sun, everything else, of, like, is it the Angelos? Is it Brady Anderson? Remember that stuff? Like, yes. No one really knows who's running them, and now...
I mean, I think it's pretty clear Michael Elias is running the Orioles.
Yeah, like, that's what I think that's the most interesting, is, like, he clearly got a lot more power than I think we would have expected him to, right?
I mean, like, I'm not surprised by that, because multiple reasons. One, they got their man when they did that search. I mean, he is the wartime consigliere. Also, he's from the Astros. You don't hire Jeff Luna as number two guy to have him take orders. You know what I mean?
But you're the Orioles. Like, would that really surprise you if the Angelos family was like, no, you're going to listen to us?
I don't think they would have hired him if they wanted a yes man, is what I'm saying. And I think they're smart enough to know who they're hiring. Mike Elias is very much in the mold of the Jeff Luhnow, this is how we're doing it, screw you, Astros. He's that same analytics, financial background, if I remember correctly.
He is.
So, yeah, I mean, this is what was going to happen. They were going to downsize the staff, they were going to downsize the scouting staff, mine is what I mean, invest in, you know, 23-year-olds from MIT and Stanford who are going to work long hours for crap pay because they're rich kids and build computer models. This is what was always going to happen. I'm not surprised by any of this.
I'm not, I guess it just goes back to, like, everything I've ever read about the Angelos family and the way the Orioles have operated. And, like, it was rumored of, like, who's, like, the brother situation. And, like,
yeah, it was very strange.
So I didn't know why Elias took this job, because when I was looking at it, I'm like, this is a terrible job, because, like, if you're a prospective Orioles GM, like, what do you think you're walking into? Like, I have no, they might get sold next year. Like, I don't know.
Well, I think Peter Angelos also wants to win a World Series.
I don't know what, I don't know. I think it sucks, though, when you read the stories of, like, these guys have been here 15 years, and, like, the reports are, it's like, these guys aren't bad at their jobs. Like, this dude just wants less of them and wants to do things differently. And I don't know how I feel about it.
The Orioles player development and scouting record has been mixed, I would say.
I mean, Machado was a good one.
I mean, yes, that was hard to screw up. But if you look at the track record, I mean, this is more the player development than scouting, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think the player development.
Like Zach Britton, guys like that, Kevin Gausman, like, those weren't bad picks.
Right. But, I mean, like, and obviously Zach Britton turned into an all-world closer, but, like, you know, he failed as a starter. Kevin Gausman never really found his footing there. Hunter Harvey only just got up because he couldn't stop getting hurt. Dylan Bundy, again, their pitching development track record is god-awful. I mean, it's a running joke at this point. Like, oh, God, Orioles pitching prospect. I mean, even their hitting development. Like, yeah, Trey Mancini's a win. I mean, you can't totally kill them because they pulled out the Eric Bedard trade. And that was, you know, the biggest coup ever. But, I mean, look at their guys. I mean, it's good and bad. Like, Chance Sisko has not hit. But they found Anthony Santander. That's a really nice Rule 5 pick. DJ Stewart, I like him a lot. Adam Nunez has been good this year. But just their pitching track record is awful. They haven't produced as many bats as they should have. Give the Orioles credit. They had a nice little run. There was a stretch where they won more games in the American League than any other team. I think it was like a 4 or 5 year stretch where they did that. And that's not nothing. And it didn't turn into a ring, and it sucks. But at the same time, this was always coming in some regard, not to this this depth of it, and not to the way it happened when Astros efficiency fetishism destruction. But there was always going to be some sort of shakeup here because the results just weren't enough.
Yeah. Well, it should be interesting to see how this works. They've got a long way to go, and it's going to be a lot of losing for several more years, I think, in Baltimore, especially in that division. How were the A's able to rise back out of the ashes for you again? What did you see this year?
They did their deal with the devil again. That's all I got. No. So the Mets are good. Chapman and Olson, they are good.
Marcus Matt Olson, Simeon, Parkview High School legend. He went to my high school. He was brother.
Marcus Simeon is having one of the most underrated seasons in the American League.
Yeah. What's changed with him? Because it seems like he's become like a different player.
He's good now. His defense has completely done a 180. He's always had the hitting talent. It's built every year. And now he's really, really good. It's a lot of it's their bullpen. I mean, Liam Hendricks is incredible now. The Diekman trade is nice. I mean, this is with Blake Treinen taking a step back, Lou Trevino not building on last year, but they picked up Joaquin Soria. He's been good. My man Yusmeiro Petit keeps on keeping on. One of my favorite players in the world, Yusmeiro Petit. Piscotty was having a nice little year until he's hurt right now, but he's having a nice little year. And they're doing this without Sean Manaea. They're doing this. AJ Puck only just surfaced. And Chris Davis has been arguably the worst player in baseball this year. And they're still doing this. It's fun. Because they're the A's, they are, doing this without any real, oomph behind things. But they're going to win their 89 games or so and have fun in the wild card game again.
It's wild. The Chris Davis stuff is kind of sad and also just
it is
perplexing.
He just forgot how to do baseball.
It's not good to forget how to do baseball, Nick.
No.
Which
is funny because the walk rate and the strikeout rate are about the same. It's just the ISO is completely gone. He's lost 20 points of batting average, which has killed his OBP, and the power is just gone. It's not good.
I'm ready for the piece to explain this, so hopefully we get that sooner rather than later. But we'll have to see. Last thing, we'll wrap up here. Luis Gohara, picked up by the Angels. Former top prospect for the Braves. Didn't work out. I love this.
I think I just got picked up by the Angels to pitch, to be fair.
He's not Matt Harvey. He's not like one of the... I really was a big Gohara guy. And I
think a lot of people were.
If he's healthy, man, like he's still only 23.
He's going to get his shots.
I think this is a great, great, great value signing for the Angels.
I mean, it's one of those things where you have to do it because it's such a low risk move, so low risk, high reward. But it's what teams in this position do. They're going to pick up the 23-year-old former top prospects and see what they can do.
It's going to click for one of them, right? Like one of these guys is going to happen for one of these teams. And I think Gohara, like if I was a team like the Angels, I think that's a dude I invest in. Because I'm like, okay, this guy it didn't work out where he was, but he's 23, great stuff. I don't know, man. I think we're going to look at it in a couple years and Gohara is going to be one of the better pitchers in the AL. I still believe that.
I mean, the Angels desperately need that to happen.
Yeah, because they don't really have any other options because they can't really trade for any of these top-of-the-line talents. And I guess they could sign somebody like Bauer or something else later on, but I don't know. Then again, I don't know. The Angels, I just want them to do something. And also, Scooter Gennett, how much money has he lost in the last like year?
Oh, it's awful.
Just awful. I cannot believe what happened here to him. It just a year from hell. He was an MVP candidate last year in the NL.
Yeah, it was not good.
He's been released by the Giants. I feel like we're not talking enough about Scooter Gennett. Just, I just can't. I don't know, man. Baseball's mean.
It's bad. I mean, if the Angels were had any sense, they would back up a truck for Garrett Cole this winter. It's not going to happen.
I mean, the Braves need to back up a truck for Garrett Cole.
I mean, there are a lot of teams that get back up a truck for Garrett Cole, but the Angels.
Do you think he stays in Houston?
No. So another thing that never got and did not get enough play. Crane, the owner for the Astros, like as soon as they traded for Greinke, basically came out and said, "Oh well, with all this money we've added to the books by trading for Zach Greinke." It'll be really hard to retain Garrett Cole without going over
the cap. Oh, he's already setting the stage.
Without going over the cap were his words.
Wow.
What a joke.
These people are insane.
What a joke. Without going over the cap.
And people bought that.
Remember, folks, the luxury tax is not a salary cap. Remember that. God. Supposedly. It's supposedly not a salary cap.
I don't know. Where does he go? Where do you think?
I mean, the Yankees are the logical conclusion in my mind.
The Dodgers don't do stuff like this.
Brian Cashman's had a Garrett Cole thing for a decade now.
You know who should do it, but won't? The Brewers.
There's about 15 teams that should do it.
But like the Brewers just drive me absolutely insane. Like they're three games over 500 right now. Like it's just, they should be better. They're wasting Christian Yelich.
So here is a list, a conclusive list of teams that should sign Garrett Cole, but will not. The Boston Red Sox, Chicago White Sox, the Cleveland Indians, the Houston Astros should, but won't. The Los Angeles Angels, the Minnesota Twins, the Oakland A's, the Tampa Bay Rays, the Texas Rangers, the Chicago Cubs, the Cincinnati Reds, Colorado Rockies, the Milwaukee Brewers, the New York Mets, the Philadelphia Phillies. Actually, they might do it. I will give them credit. They might do it. The Padres might do it, so I will give them credit. The St. Louis Cardinals should but won't. And the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Wasn't Garrett Cole, like, wasn't the holdup the last time Cashman wanted him, wasn't it Clint Frazier? Wasn't that the reason that deal didn't happen with the Pirates?
Yes.
Wow.
Which at the time was a smart thing to.
But looking back, hindsight. Oh, man.
Hindsight's always 20/20, but yeah.
How is he still on the Yankees? Can someone please trade for Clint Frazier and put him in the majors? Can the Giants just go ahead and trade for him?
I will. The Giants are not going to trade for him. Not going to trade for his defense.
No.
Not in that park. No. But I will say somewhat definitively Clint Frazier will be in a different organization starting next season.
Does he hit 1,000 home runs in Minnesota next year?
That's actually so I don't know if he's going to go to Minnesota because I would assume he's a trade chip. I don't think they're just going to straight up cut him.
No, that would be ridiculous. Could they actually cut him? Is that in play?
I mean, it's theoretically possible, but they're not going to do it.
No.
But no, I can't imagine the Twins and the Yankees pulling off a trade right now because they're such clear competitors with each other. I don't know what they have that each other might want. I could see him. Okay, let's say trade. I don't know. St. Louis. The Cubs, the Diamondbacks, teams like that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to see what happens there. Nick, what can we read from you at Baseball Prospectus this week? In some future,
nothing in the immediate horizon. I've been a busy bee, but you know, just keep an eye out.
All right, well, we can find you on Twitter at Selene Tweets. Thank you, as always, for making the time, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick. All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Thank you again to our presenting sponsor, Ponco Chicken. Thank you again to all of my awesome guests for coming on the pod. And don't forget, if you like today's episode and you are an Apple Podcast listener, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. It helps. You can also find us on Google Play, Spotify, ChaseThomasPodcast.com, where you can access all of my previous episodes and read all my work. So ChaseThomasPodcast/page-11. So go do that, read all my stuff, listen to the podcast, all that good stuff. Also follow me on Twitter at Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. And also follow me on Instagram at Chase_Thomas. All right. Thanks so much, guys. And I will have another episode for you very soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.